recently I was asked to bless a man who had died. He was 90 years old, but he had been healthy up until just a few days before he died. In fact, he just died Saturday, and he was healthy on Thursday, so it was a very short illness. The man who asked me to do the blessing was his son, so he was probably in his early 60s. Together with him were his two sons in their 30s, and one of those sons has two children, maybe elementary school kids, maybe first grade, something like that. So I suddenly found myself in this progression of generations, 90 years old, 60 years old, 30 years old, and about 10 years old, or 8 years old. Of course, they were mourning the loss of the Lolo, or the Tatai, but it was also kind of normal. I mean, how long do you expect people to live? And they understood that when you get to be older, you die. So there was sadness, but it was also a kind of recognition of the human condition. And the passing on of one's heritage to the next generation, because the one who asked me to do the blessing is now the patriarch. Now he's the old man, and his grandchildren, who are the great-grandchildren of the one who died, now they're looking to him the way his children looked to his father. You could see it very clearly. One of the blessings mentioned in the scriptures is to be able to see your children and your children's children. Your children, your grandchildren. And then if you can see your children's children's children, your great-grandchildren, well then that means you've lived a long life and you have the blessing of seeing even the next generation, as this man, this 90-year-old man, knew his great-grandchildren. Well, that's still fresh in my mind, and as I turned to the first reading today and heard about the death of David, it came back to my mind. David says to his son Solomon, "I am going the way of all flesh," which is a kind of gentle way of saying, I'm close to death now. I'm going to die just like everybody else. And so he gives a kind of last word, a kind of a wisdom that he's gained from his long life. He passes it on to his son, Solomon. Now David, of course, was the greatest of the kings. A great man, a great warrior, a great man of faith, but also a man of many weaknesses and failures. You notice in his advice to his son Solomon that he doesn't so much emphasize his failures or even his successes. What he emphasizes is faithfulness to God. Faithfulness to God. This is what's important. Even though we naturally look to our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, we want them to flourish, we want them to have what we have and more. But what's most important for the succeeding generations is that they know the Lord and do His will, or as it's described by David, you know, follow His statutes, His commands, His ordinances and His decrees, follow the law. Now, the law has to be understood properly as the loving guidance of God who has chosen us. And if you do that, he says to Solomon, well then the Lord will be faithful to his covenant, and he will make sure that someone among my descendants will always remain on the throne. And then he dies, David dies. He rested with his ancestors, it says, and he was buried. So what we see here is this succession, this passing on of the heritage, not only of the earthly kingdom, but even more importantly, of the heavenly kingdom. As I have been called to be faithful to God, and as God has chosen me, so I'm entrusting to you this mission, be faithful to God and do His will, follow His law. It's quite striking that Solomon is the son of Bathsheba and David. Bathsheba was the wife of Uriah, and David's low point of his life was when he took Bathsheba from Uriah and had him killed. And yet, God writing straight with crooked lines, God bringing good out of evil. He brings forth from that sinful moment in David's life, this son, Solomon. Solomon, who becomes the next king of Israel. Now, so there's two levels here. There's this human level in which we want our descendants to flourish, and we entrust them to the care of God. But then there's the spiritual kingdom, because none of us lives here forever, and no matter what happens, no matter how great our kingdom is, or how successful or how bad we are, it comes to an end and we go to God. We stand before the real king, the King of Kings. So it's always necessary for us to keep in mind this higher calling, so that we don't get so preoccupied with our earthly matters that we forget where we're going. Well, there's another passage about succession here in the gospel. Now, Jesus is not on his deathbed. In fact, he hasn't even mentioned how he's going to die yet. He's still early in his public ministry. But he has chosen the 12 to be his apostles, and now in this gospel, he sends out the 12. He sends them out 2 by 2. What do they do? Well, they preach repentance, just like Jesus was doing. They drive out unclean spirits, just like Jesus was doing. They cure the sick, just like Jesus was doing. In other words, they're carrying on the mission that Jesus received from the Father. And Jesus didn't have to give this job to anybody else. He could do it all. But this is part of God's loving plan. He wants us to be participants in his plan. He doesn't want us to be only recipients, but participants. So he's giving to the 12 this share in establishing the kingdom. It's very clear that he's not giving them earthly power or telling them to establish an earthly dynasty, because he says, don't take any money and don't take any food, don't take any provisions, don't take any earthly support. Rely solely on how God will provide. So it's clearly a spiritual kingdom, and this is very effective when it comes to the proclamation of the gospel. Whenever famous preachers start getting rich and live in mansions and have private jets, people start to say, well, what's the motive behind this fellow's ministry? Is he just doing this to build his own earthly kingdom? But if a preacher or an apostle or a minister of the church is other-centered and is not building up his own bank account, then he's usually more trustworthy. Anyway, this is the mission entrusted to the apostles. It's the mission of Jesus himself, and this mission continues in the church to this day, because the apostles died, and their successors died, and their successors died. And so the church the Lord hands on this responsibility to the church, and the church hands it on from generation to generation. What we keep in mind here is that we're not simply building a human kingdom. We're not simply building a earthly church. We're not simply accomplishing human goals. We're doing the work of Jesus Christ as he was doing the will of the Father. It's a journey of faith. It's a ministry of faith. It's an abandonment of ourselves to God so that he can do his work. It's actually part of what we reflected on last Sunday with the proclamation of the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. The people who are rich are the ones who have the kingdom of earth. But the people who are poor in spirit have the kingdom of heaven. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So that's what the apostles are proclaiming and living, the kingdom of heaven. Today's saint is another example of this, Saint Agatha, virgin martyr of the 3rd century. Saint Agatha, part of the reason why she was always so impressive and is still impressive to this day, hundreds and hundreds of years later, is that she dedicated herself to the heavenly kingdom by pledging her virginity to God. She sacrificed to the next generation. She didn't get married, but she refused the many who wanted to marry her. Because, not because she was against marriage, but because she had a higher calling. She had an eternal wedding already established. She was the spouse of Jesus Christ, and she was determined to remain faithful to him. So her virginity, consecrated virginity, is already one clear sign of a heavenly kingdom. It doesn't make sense on the earthly level. It doesn't make sense not to have children, because then what happens when you die? But it does make sense in the spiritual life, because that's where we're going. Then the other part of the witness of Agatha, not only her virginity, but her martyrdom. She sacrificed her life to be faithful to her spouse. She was willing to die rather than deviate from her love. And that's a sign to us of what kingdom we're talking about here. The kingdom that the apostles proclaimed, the kingdom that Jesus established, the kingdom the apostles proclaimed, and that the church has always promoted in the world. This kingdom, which is so valuable that it's worth dying for, that it's worth making every sacrifice for. There's nothing more precious than our relationship with God. So nothing, even the promise of survival, should make us turn away from him. So Agatha, the great example today, Saint Agatha, Virgin Martyr, all of these passages then reminding us, yes, we live in this world and we are a part of earthly establishments and families and dynasties of sorts, but those all pass away. David was a great king, powerful king, rich king. He died. Solomon was a great king, rich king, powerful king. He died. All kings died. All apostles died. All bishops died. All of us died. Jesus Christ doesn't die, and his kingdom remains forever. So our deeper identity and our great hope and consolation is that we are servants of Jesus Christ, the King.